Okay, welcome once again to the Tim and Lo Show. I am Tim English, coming to you from the Alamo Draft House with my traveling companion, Lonita Cook.
I am Lonita Cook, your friendly neighborhood film critic.
Right, so we're coming to you from the Draft House, and we've got a cool show today. We've got a guest, which is going to be awesome. Our first guest, Michelle
first
T. Johnson. The diversity diva.
I'm your first guest?
Wow.
Yeah,
first guest.
That's right.
When we thought of our first guest, you were the one to come
to
mind.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I like being an inaugural.
There you go. We're pumped. We're
dun,
excited.
Dun, dun.
This is very cool. Michelle T. Johnson, diversity diva, Kansas City Star, is going to be talking race in Hollywood a little bit with us.
Yeah, that is our conversation for the big debate, race in Hollywood.
Because this is our Oscar preview show.
That's right.
We're going to talk about a lot of different things. We'll talk about Oscars. We're going to talk about the Razzies. So we'll be talking the best and worst of film in the past year. And we can even, you know, if we have time somewhere in there, throw in anything we liked.
Yeah. So, Diversity Diva, she writes for Kansas City Star. Of course, we're going to talk race in Hollywood, in cinema, but we want to talk, our approach to it is diversity, where it fits, how it fits, that sort of thing. That's why we've welcomed Michelle T. Johnson with us today. I wanted to read something that she's written for the Kansas City Star, just a couple lines to get you oriented to her perspective. And one of her columns, she says, diverse goals await in 2014. One of the reasons that some people discount diversity and inclusion issues as a priority is because the concepts seem fuzzy, but values put into action should never seem unimportant or fuzzy.
Right on.
You said that.
I said that. Don't hold it against me.
No. So, all right. I guess it's been a long weekend. It's Monday for
us.
Monday morning. I'm dragging a little bit because I moved over the weekend.
Oh, congratulations. So you're all set? You're all the way in your house?
We're moved.
We're not all set.
You know, because after you move, there's all this, like, takes a few weeks to get everything kind of back together. But now I'm just too lazy to do anything, so it'll probably take longer. But that's what I did. I moved. Not much else going on. So, you, how was your weekend?
It's the same every weekend, Tim. I worked.
I worked.
I guess when
you get to this age, the weekends, it's all the same thing.
Yeah.
What'd you do this weekend? Same thing I did last weekend. What'd I say last weekend?
Pretty soon, it won't be the same because we are officially going to Comic-Con Kansas City.
That's right.
We sure are.
That's the 14th, 15th, and 16th of March out at Bartle Hall in Kansas City, Missouri. Very excited. We're going to be out there, I believe, on Saturday, you know. And we're going to try to get some guests. They've got a whole bunch of people from Star Trek and Walking Dead. And the $6 Million Man's going to be there.
What?
Lee Majors.
No way.
And Margot
Kidder. It's awesome. Okay.
So
I'm going to assume she's over here.
Yeah.
Like going crazy.
Oh,
so you have a geek card as well?
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me?
Nice.
She created the geek card.
There you go.
I'm like, okay, if Robert Downey Jr. decides to show up to say something about, you know, the next Iron Man movie, please invite me to be a guest again.
That would be awesome.
You just want some points.
Yeah.
All right. So Michelle has her geek card, so she's good. So, but that's why she's here. We knew she'd fit right in. So, yeah. So.
And the other thing that's going on with me is we started a segment last time called Healthy Entertainment.
Yeah.
And I proposed that I would like to lose weight. I am not ashamed of being someone who'd like to be more active, to be trimmer. And like the thing that I said was I'd like to have greater access to my body. That's what weight loss means for me. And over the weekend, my friend Myron Vessel, he sweetened the deal. And he proposed that if I get down to my goal size, because I'm not really doing it by weight, it's my goal size, by July 4th, he will take me on an all-expenses-paid trip to Los Angeles.
Now, who's this dude?
Who's this dude? He is one of my BFFs.
Because, you know, as your co-host, I will develop a little bit of you know, protection over you. So I just want to make sure that
I am so
like, hey, baby, you lose some weight and I'll take you on a vacation. I need to make sure this is all up and up.
And I was thinking, does, you know, Spanx count as being able to fit into the size? Okay.
Yeah.
Spanx are a girl's best friend. I think that no matter what size we are, when we're in entertainment, we kind of use that extra, you know, that extra boost in figure shaping. But no, Myron is one of my besties. I've known him for about 8 or 9 years, and he's been with me through ups and downs. And he he's, you know, like a blue collar guy. We sit around and we talk and just laugh and have fun. But he's also got kind of like this filmmaking spirit. You know, he's almost 50. He might not want me to say that, but he's almost 50. And I keep telling him, just do it. Write that screenplay. You have amazing ideas. He's into sci-fi and those sorts of things.
Not as well.
Yeah, just do it.
All right, Myron, did you hear that? It's time to write your script. So if Myron starts writing his script, maybe we'll have him on as a guest. He can come on and talk about it.
You hear that, Myron?
He can talk about writing a script.
I would love that.
When I say at that age, I don't mean at that age. I just mean, you know.
Yeah, watch it.
You get to a point in your life and to all of a sudden decide to do something like that, you know?
I mean, that's very ambitious.
Cool.
And I hope you heard that, Myron. We're calling you out.
Myron, I don't know you, but do it, man. Do it. So, all right. So.
Yeah, I guess.
What's your size? You want to say the size you want to get to?
Well,
I don't want to get too personal.
No. I'm a full-figured woman. I think I've always run kind of big, even when I was slim, before I had children, before I sat on the couch and cried and ate ice cream all day. No, I'm just kidding. And I'm what they call big-boned. So, so I think a size 8, maybe 8'10", right, would be a little... It might be too much, but we're shooting for an 8. But if I get to a 10 and it's like, damn, you banging, then I'm going to stop there.
Don't be like we talked about last week.
Yes, no cracked out. I promise.
Too small and it gets unhealthy. Be what's healthy for you, all right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, all right. So in the news, a few things in the news.
Woo!
Let's switch over to some things going on in the world of entertainment. Lego Movie, number one again, over $31 million this weekend.
Goodness.
Third week in a row. It crossed over the $200 million mark last week, so it's just raking in cash. Plus, they have, greenlit, or at least set a release date for the sequel, which... here in like 3 years.
Yeah, when you make that kind of money,
right.
First thing you think, more money!
They're probably further ahead of it on it than they're even willing to admit.
That's exactly.
Especially with these animated movies, they really got to jump out and get ahead of themselves. So.
And one thing that I'm excited about is the start of production on Entourage, the movie.
All right. Did you like Entourage?
I watched every episode of every season.
How many seasons did that run?
Oh, maybe 7?
Okay.
Maybe 7?
I watched every season except for the last one. The last episode I watched was the one where Eminem knocked Vince out.
Okay?
And I think I canceled my HBO subscription. Something happened. I just didn't see it. But yet, I've had HBO on and off since, and I never have gone back and watched it.
Is it still on demand?
I'm sure it is.
Right.
Because it's one of the, you know, if you go to HBO on demand. And then I actually, one day, was like, hey, I'm going to watch an old episode. So I had season one of it. And for me, it just really seemed even more childish. It just didn't seem like it held up the way I remembered it.
I'm not going to lie to you. I felt the same way about Sex and the City.
Mm-hmm.
As during the season, it was phenomenal. I watched it every Sunday. I was at home. I don't care what's going down in the world. I'm chilling with my girls. But then when they start rerunning them and I watch them and then
some hold up better than others.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm a huge... Because I got rid of my HBO when Sex and the City went off. So that means I've been HBO free for, I think,
quite
literally
some time.
10 years as of
sure.
this week. Because there was an article I just read on that, you know. You know, and you're right. Some hold up even better.
Yeah.
And some are like, oh, that's so dated.
Yeah.
Or that's so New York.
Yeah.
As opposed to, you know, I'm a Midwestern girl. I'm like...
Yeah, I have that problem with some shows. It's like, how am I supposed to relate to
this? I can't relate to that.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, and I felt like Entourage was the male version of Sex in the
City. Absolutely was. And I am looking forward to the movie. I will go see it, you know, but I'll have to get caught up, you know, the way I didn't miss any big events in Vince's life. But when that show was good, it was very good.
It was amazing.
Very entertaining, had some good laughs. And Jeremy Piven is excellent.
Oh, you know, yes, he is. I mean, there's no denying
that. That's his born to play that role.
Yes, he was.
You know, for him.
And another one, I believe his name is pronounced Quarrow, Reese Quarrow, who played Billy, the director.
Oh, yeah.
And I met him, actually.
Really?
And when I met him, I'm looking at him like, I know you. And so I said to him, I said, don't I know you? And he was like, well. And I was like, oh.
He'd look at you with that.
The thing is, he is so tall, dark, and handsome in person. Mm. You would never be able to tell from that character, but in person, he is drop dead. Mm. Oh, yes. And that would be gorgeous.
Okay.
Sorry. I mean, he's talented. He's a talented
I liked him
actor.
On that show.
And he was fantastic on that show.
What else in the news? Oh, we just talked about this, and I know you're excited. I'm excited. Heroes is coming back to TV in 2015.
Heroes Reborn. Yeah. I almost had another baby when I read that. I said, oh, my gosh. Because, you know, I mean, I'm struggling on the amount of television that I'm watching these days. But that show, I was on it. I watched it.
That's a show, I think. I love shows that try to have a really deep mythology. Mm-hmm. But, man, if you're going to do it, you have to do it right. Yeah. You have to have all the writers on board. You have to have a plan, a strategy. I think for people who lost interest in Lost, that was a problem. It kind of went up and down.
Sure.
And I got lost on Lost.
It never went, you know, the way people were hoping, the way they thought, you know, you weren't getting the answers. In Heroes, we talked about it got kind of messed up by the writer's strike.
A little convoluted.
But it also, it kind of changed showrunners a couple of times.
Hmm.
And, you know, when that happens, you still need to keep the plan instead of a guy coming in and go, oh, well, that's what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Let's go this direction.
Sure.
Because then everybody, it gets lost. I mean, those characters all were switching powers. Nobody.
Yeah.
Who was the bad guy?
I know.
Siler? Was that his name?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Siler.
Right. He was like good, bad, had powers, didn't have powers. I mean, they just never know. But that being said, I'm kind of looking forward to it coming back.
I'm looking
and
forward,
seeing what they do with it, you know. Maybe they've learned something since it left the air. But I'd like to see
some
of the cast and maybe some of the old
I think that they're doing it right, though. They waited a while. They let the dust settle because I know that they know they had something special with the concept.
Sure.
And when it debuted, it was phenomenal. Like, even those of us who have half a geek card were like, oh my goodness, Heroes is amazing. But then I think they also know that it was tragic that the writer's strike came and it suffered because of it. And I think that this is probably...
What that means is you need to not treat writers bad.
That's
the lesson. That's always, every day.
I appreciate you saying that.
I think the writer is like one of the most underappreciated person in that process because it gets to be, you know, you just hear a lot of jokes. Oh, you can't allow a writer on the set, you know, stuff like that. But without good writing, these actors don't have anything good to say.
I'm a playwright, so you don't have to tell me.
Yeah. I mean,
and she is a nationally produced playwright.
Brad Pitt, Denzel, whoever, they're not going out there and ad-libbing
while
they're out there, you know?
It's not improv.
The director is, you know, well, sometimes the director can be the writer, obviously, but the director's not the one that's putting that. It's just his vision of somebody else's idea most of the time.
Exactly.
So, treat your writers right. Writers deserve to get paid what they're hopefully getting paid now. I mean, you know, when that strike happened, hopefully.
They deserve to get paid like anybody else. They deserve to get paid what they're worth. They deserve to get paid based on the work that they put in.
That strike was part of the reason for that outburst of all this reality TV, which I can't stand reality TV.
Okay, I'm kind of a reality TV.
Are you? What do you like to watch?
Well, because I'm a writer, I like stuff that doesn't require a whole lot of my attention. So, like, if a American Idol or The Voice are on, I can really like sort of tune out until something seems interesting. But my summer passion is Big Brother, which is the stupidest reality TV in the history, and I get excited, like visibly excited, when they have the first commercial on saying Big Brother is coming. because I'm all about people watching.
Sure.
And with reality TV, and to a certain extent, it's people watching.
As a playwright, that makes sense, because people watching, it helps you develop.
Right.
But I mean, reality TV is also scripted, right?
To some extent, it is.
Yeah.
Like, that's why Big Brother seems the least scripted of them all, because mm-hmm. they really are in the house for the most part. Yeah, sure. I'm sure they could be feeding them stuff. Right. But, you know, I recognize crazy when I see crazy. So when they have certain interaction, I'm like, oh, no, that's real.
I think a lot of times what they do is they get the collection of people
there
they
you
want.
Go.
They see there where the go. Stories start to go, and then they're like, hey, you and her,
yeah.
this needs to
yeah.
happen.
Yeah.
You know, or
yeah.
you guys, the way you kind of go at each other, you need to really turn the screws on him.
Lonita
you know?
Knows that there's probably two or three people that if you put me in a house with them for 6 weeks and cut us off from contact, you'd have the reality
yeah,
TV
absolutely.
Show of the ages.
Right. It'd be reality show for your ass.
Right.
My problem,
right.
though, with the reality shows is, you know, early when they started, I think you got a lot more of that honest.
Right.
Because, you know, there were.
I agree.
You know, and now it's all been commercialized and
I
redone
agree.
And done again. So now people go on that show knowing how they're supposed to act.
I completely
well,
agree with you.
You know,
yeah.
And
I mean, for me, I enjoyed reality TV back when the real world
yeah.
debuted
right.
in, what, 1992?
Totally.
It was amazing. But now it's kind of like its own genre.
It's sort of what Tim's saying. It really was more of an interesting social experiment
right.
back in real world days, where you really did just like, okay, let's put these collection of human beings who normally wouldn't get together and see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
And now, you're right, there's so many people who's like, oh, if I get on reality TV and act a certain way, I'll get a TV show.
Right.
Or I'll ask to be...
Or I can write a book.
Or something.
Or I marry someone famous. Ooh, I
yeah.
should be on a reality
yeah.
show.
Or someone famous.
Yeah.
Maybe Keanu Reeves. Ding, ding, ding.
Oh,
there's
goodness.
Our Keanu Reeves reference.
I have to tell you a funny story about The Bachelor, though. This is my grandmother, who she has Alzheimer's now, but she's like the wisest woman that I know. And I remember jokingly saying to her, this is before her Alzheimer's, I said, and it was a joke, because I was not the demographic in any way that would be on The Bachelor.
Right.
So, but I said to her one day, I said, what would you think about me being on The Bachelor? And she says, well, what do you get? I said, you get a husband. I said, well, what else? She goes, well, what else do you get? I said, that's it, a husband, proposal, you get married. She goes, no money? I said, no. She says, well, you can stay home and marry somebody broke.
Right.
I'm like, you know, you raise a good point.
Yes, yes, you can stay home and marry someone broke if you don't get any money.
Yeah.
But
so, I thought that in a nutshell, just kind of sort of.
And that
yeah.
statement that you made might actually be a great segue into our the big debate, because I know The Bachelor has come under fire for, how long has it been on the air now?
Oh, my God.
For
well, my grandmother has been in a nursing home for 8 years, so that conversation was several years before that. So it's been on a good dozen years, I think.
Sure.
Yeah,
well,
at least 10.
Well, I'm sorry to hear about your grandmother.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I always think that because yeah. I know that you post things about
yeah.
her on Facebook.
Yeah.
But I would say The Bachelor has come under fire because of the lack of racial diversity.
Oh, Lord.
And so having you here, the diversity
yeah.
diva, we
it's
can start.
It's not such a bad thing, though, sometimes. Sometimes, mm-hmm. honestly, people of color don't need to match white people
mm-hmm.
at all stupidity. You know, everything doesn't have to be. Well, I want to have the equal opportunity to look a complete idiot
right,
on TV.
Right.
Real Housewives of Atlanta. Yes, we have diversity. Is that all, except if you're NeNe Leakes, is that a good thing necessarily?
Right. Now, I'm not going to lie to you. I got kind of hooked on the hip hop show on VH1.
Night. I love in basketball. I didn't watch that one.
I didn't watch Love and Basketball.
No, Flavor Flav?
No. It was it was, I would watch the shows about the ex-wives of celebrities.
Oh, and I didn't see that one.
Prince's wife was on there. Yeah. Eddie Murphy's wife was on there.
Even I have to go. No, I can't do that.
Sometimes you do have to draw a line.
Yeah. Well, and trust me, I don't draw a lot.
Will Smith's ex-wife was on there. That was pretty cool.
I bet it was.
Who's his ex-wife?
The one you haven't heard of.
Yeah.
I know.
See, that's it. It's the people who have these shows right. so they can cling to exactly. some sort of celebrity exactly. status. When most people just, it's like, who cares? Mm-hmm.
Love and Hip Hop is the other show.
See, the thing about reality TV is here's the thing that's scary. My best friend and I always laugh about this. Because it's so easy to get caught up, mm-hmm. you know. You start watching it for 5 minutes, and the next thing you know, you're DVRing the whole season. Yeah. It's like, what happened?
Hold on. I gotta see what happens when he finds
exactly.
out. You know, and then you're right, and then you're
wrong.
Like, then it leaves you with that cliffhanger because
totally.
They have to leave you at the end of the episode. Oh, man, we got to wait till... All right, so we'll see if they know about it.
Sometimes you just have to put down the crack pipe.
That's right. Sometimes you just have to go,
I cannot watch that again.
I'm just saying no.
So Hollywood Exes, it had, let's see, Cherie Fletcher. She's the ex-wife of Will Smith, the one that's the mother of his eldest son, and she's married to a pastor now. She's a pastor's wife, and then it had Jessica Canseco, who obviously was married to Jose Canseco, and Andrea Kelly. But nobody ever brought up R. Kelly and the whole controversy
there.
There's
no reason to have R. Kelly's ex on here if you ain't going to discuss
that's
R.
Right.
Kelly's
right.
that's a wasted slot.
I mean, as far as I know, they didn't discuss it because I came in after it begun because I don't, typically watch reality TV.
I just want you to know, y'all are making me lose my education card the more I talk.
That's the thing.
The one that goes out the window.
We all have degrees, and we're like, did you see when he slapped her? Oh my God!
I know. I mean, when I told, I made the mistake of mentioning to my best friend that I got caught up in Flavor of Love with a Flavor Flav's dating show.
Yeah,
and she said, I am taking away your educated black woman card.
Well, there just are those shows that, that you watch that you just don't talk about with people.
Because
even if you hear somebody else talk about it, you always kind of play dumb. Yeah. I don't know if they're still together, but you're like, are they? Like, I want to know. I missed last night's episode.
Right.
So.
Well, moving from television to the big screen, a number of movies came out last week, and right. I saw none of them.
I saw one of them.
You saw one?
I saw one. I saw Pompeii.
And that is the story of the Italian city that
yes.
was covered in volcano?
Yes. It also has a Titanic/Gladiator love story attached to it.
Nice.
So, right, in 79 AD, a big volcano exploded.
Mm-hmm.
And in this movie, you have this dude who's a slave-turned-gladiator who falls in love with the rich girl.
Of course.
Who's betrothed to a Roman senator.
Isn't that exactly like Gladiator?
Well, there's the slave-gladiator. That would be more the Titanic part.
Okay.
Rich girl, betrothed.
Oh, okay.
Like Kate Winslet.
I see.
So they come together and, she sees this gladiator guy. You watch Game of Thrones? We've talked about this. I know. I have short-term memory because I hit my head a lot.
Why you keep calling me out on this stuff I haven't seen, Tim?
Oh, girl. All right. So, Kit Harington is Jon Snow on Game of Thrones. He's the main character of this movie. He's the slave. He falls in love with Emily Browning's character. She's betrothed to Kiefer Sutherland, who's playing this Roman senator with a horrible accent.
Nice.
And so these two people fall in love and... There's fights and scenes ripped off right out of Gladiator. You've seen Gladiator?
Correct? Yes.
The scene where they're
yes, I've
in
seen
the arena,
Gladiator.
Brad Pitt.
And there's
Oh, that's Troy.
Never mind.
Ooh, but you know I saw that, honey.
I'm sorry.
Tim is talking. Yes.
Sorry.
Oh, yeah. That's all right. No, where are we going, Brad Pitt?
Yeah, we went off the deep end. What? Girl, Brad Pitt. With the muscles and the hair. And
that photograph of him on the cell phone while he was in costume. That was so sexy. Mm. Anyway, I'm sorry.
Josh, what's going on? Okay. Josh is just like, bro, it's all you, man. So, anyways. Oh, the scene in Gladiator where they're in the arena and they're supposed to be reenacting an event, uh-huh. like a real life battle, but you know, they turn the tables and wipe everybody out.
Right.
You know, pretty much a scene almost exactly like that. Even really? To the point where a character's like, hey, I don't remember it happening this way. I mean, it's almost like line for line dialogue. But, oh yeah, and then the volcano explodes and kills everybody. Spoiler alert. If you've seen the poster, that's the end of the movie. Spoiler alert. Sorry.
So,
I'm not worried about ruining it.
I guess my question is, did you like Pompeii?
I would not go as far as... I didn't not like it. It had an entertainment value. Like, okay. While you're watching it, you're not thinking, oh my God, will this just end, please? You know, like I have with some movies, especially disaster movies.
Right.
But the actors are good enough that it keeps you interested, even if the script isn't good enough to make them interesting. We're still showing pictures of Brad Pitt. Anyways, if it makes you feel better, there's lots of shots of Kit Harington all ripped. And
all ripped?
So there you can see everything.
All naked, all sweaty? What's going on?
Sweaty, dirty.
Okay, see the movie? That's what you're saying?
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, I didn't see anything else this weekend. 3 Days to Kill with Kevin Costner was the other one. There was a couple of smaller movies, Barefoot, In Secret. But 3 Days to Kill and Pompeii screened the same night.
Right. So, and that's happening to me this week. I'm going to go see Nonstop, but I kind of wanted to see Son of God, but they're screening the same night.
Didn't you see the Bible that was on the, what was that, History Channel or something a couple years ago? Did you see that miniseries?
I may have.
Pretty much that. I mean, it is.
Did you see Son of God already?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't seen the movie.
Oh, right.
But it's, you know, that was like a 6-week miniseries or something where it's like 2 hours each week. And this is just the story of Jesus Christ. They told in that, just those scenes with kind of some deleted scenes and kind of stuff just to make it a movie. So it's not even a new movie is what I'm saying.
It's not a new movie. No, it's literally
cultivated from this. From this miniseries.
Well, you know, I wanted to see it because, with the exception of The Passion of Christ, they always make Jesus so hot. And they do that. I mean, I think it's, a part of making Jesus appealing.
And white. I'm sorry.
And white.
I'm sorry.
Yes. I mean, and that in itself is interesting because I just said Jesus is fine. And she's like, and he's white. So I do want to see it.
Is that what you're seeing? Is that what you're telling me?
I'm going to go see Nonstop.
Okay. With Liam Neeson?
With Liam Neeson.
I'm going to try to get out to that one. I'm looking forward to that, although it's really just Taken 3, isn't it?
Taken 3 on a plane.
I love Liam Neeson because he is such a badass.
They need to throw some snakes on this pitch.
Do they just go, hey, this is kind of like the movie you need to do? And he's just like, I don't even need to read it.
I got my gun.
I don't have a good Liam Neeson Irish accent.
What was that movie he was in? Because that was Liam Neeson, or maybe it wasn't him, but I'm pretty sure it was him, where he was the ghost, and he kept appearing in the bathtub in this haunted mansion, and he's like, you know, washing this woman's back. And
IMDb search commencing.
Make it happen. Oh, I used to love this movie growing up. And at the end of the movie, he tricks her into jumping out of the window so she could die and be with him for the rest
goodness.
Of it. It was the most amazing.
Thanks for giving away the ending, Lonita.
My bad. Spoiler alert.
Hey, you know, speaking of that, there one thing I want to talk about next week is spoilers in movies. So don't let me forget.
There are spoilers
just
inside
spoilers.
The movies?
No, I just mean spoilers like, you know, when you talk to people about movies, how, you know, we'll get into it. Just remind me.
God,
spoilers next week.
That's
there you go,
watch,
right?
That's why I watched House of Cards season 2 last weekend, even though I had way too much to do to watch 13 episodes.
Right.
Because I hate spoilers.
You can't get on the internet without some idiot on Facebook or Twitter being like, oh my gosh.
I accidentally spoiled, and I can live with that, but I cannot have it spoiled for me. I'm just kidding. Yeah, I don't accidentally spoil.
I know you're going to be very disappointed in me, Diversity Diva, when I say that I have not yet watched season 3 of Scandal.
I haven't.
Uh-oh. What?
Season 3, it pops off.
Does it really?
And Joe Morton, who's on there as her father, mm-hmm. as an actor,
yes.
he is so powerful an actor that it is worth watching the season just to see him as her father.
Nice.
Yes, because he's just that powerful and that good. And talk about some racial issues that aren't directly racial. Mm-hmm. He says some things that are just like every black person watching it, even though he's not technically talking about black, are like going, what?
Right.
They're just like, it's the most subversive thing I've ever seen, and I love it.
Wow. Okay, so I will be on Scandal. I mean, I feel like
I've never seen it.
You've never seen Scandal?
Nope.
But see, it's like Heroes. I liked Heroes when I watched a little bit of it, but it's one of those shows, if you don't get in on it at the very beginning,
you have to watch from,
you can't really enjoy it.
So that'd be a good binge watch show, you think?
Yeah, it would be.
I'm kind of getting into that with TV, is just, I think that's almost the best way, because I get kind of sick of that week to week, the tease, especially when... And sometimes, and I think this is a problem Lost had, whereas ABC cuts like the little commercials, mm-hmm. the clips, the next week mm-hmm. on this show, and then all the commercials that air in between that always promise you stuff.
Right.
You know, so I think audiences get confused in that, oh, but they said this was going to get answers. And it's not the writers who are like, oh, by the way, tell them this is what we're doing this week. So I think you just... You miss out on all that just kind of BS in between, and you can just boom, 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 boom.
Right. Did anybody watch the TV show Alias?
Yes.
That's one of my all-time favorite TV shows.
We can talk about J.J. We should just have a J.J. Abrams show sometime.
Let's do it.
And talk about J.J. Abrams all
It'll
day.
Have to be down the line, because apparently I need to watch Lost, Alias. What else I need to
do? I didn't watch Lost, but Alias was my...
Lost, mm-hmm. Alias, his movies...
Star Trek. He did Star Trek.
J.J. Abrams, like, dislike. Okay. All right. Josh is nodding in approval. All right. So, all right. Oh, before we move on to our big debate, I was going to say High Spirits.
High Spirits.
What was the name?
Yes, High Spirits. You guys have to see this movie.
It sounds so awesome. It's just a dream. It's got Steve Guttenberg in it also.
Oh, yes, it does.
And Beverly D'Angelo.
That's right.
And Peter O'Toole. How they got him in that movie.
Yes.
In 1988, Peter O'Toole didn't have better things to do then.
High Spirits is an amazing movie.
If you think about what he's done since then, no, he did not.
I'm sorry.
That was kind of on the down.
I'm sorry.
High Spirits was an amazing film.
And this is one of those that I might watch and be like, oh, right, I remember that movie. Especially I would have been 13. I was probably literally watching every single movie on HBO, whatever. So some of the stuff kind of gets, stuck in the back.
You were how old in 1988?
I was 13.
I was younger
13,
than that.
I was on like my third job after college.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. So we're going to talk big debate. I'm going to let you kind of get started here. I know you planned a little bit of this.
The big debate this week is about race in Hollywood. The reason why I said, oh my goodness, we got to talk about this. I was in the grocery aisle, because I am there a lot, and I saw the cover of Essence magazine and the cover of Vanity Fair, and they're celebrating the movies, and of course it would stand to reason that Essence would feature the black actors. But then when I opened the magazine and read the editor's note, Vanessa K. Bush is the editor-in-chief, and I read the editor's note, I thought, wow, this is a topic that we need to talk about. Because Octavia Butler, she is a sci-fi writer. She's deceased now. But she had said in the media that part of the and I think that she's under-celebrated. She's brilliant.
Yeah, she's one of my favorite writers.
Yeah, she's under-celebrated. Mm-hmm. And she said one of the reasons she began writing is because she loved sci-fi, but the books she was reading and the shows that she was watching didn't represent her. She didn't see people in them that looked like her. And I think that a lot of non-white writers and actors, they get into the business because of that, partially because now they're artists, but that's a part of what compels them. Sure. And so one of the things that I wanted to read, if it's okay, from what Vanessa K. Bush, editor-in-chief of Essence Magazine, said, and she said, "As a kid, I loved going to the drive-in with my family. Last year, I spent more time in movie theaters than I had since then, losing myself in Lee Daniels' The Butler, Mandela, Long Walk to Freedom, Fruitvale Station, and 12 Years a Slave, which enjoyed box office success. I wasn't surprised. When Hollywood offers multidimensional stories of our lives, we vote with our dollars. We've defied industry expectations by lining up in droves to ensure that Waiting to Exhale would be a hit, or keeping an independent gem like Beast of the Southern Wild in theaters. Add the range of blockbusters, comedies, and dramas we also go to see, and you'll realize we're contributing to the bottom line in La La Land. There's power in our pocketbooks. African American consumers could spend more than $1 trillion this year. Let's wield that power with purpose." And I thought, wow, today we're still having a conversation about representation of black actors, black directors, cinematographers in Hollywood. And then on the flip side, we're still talking about the power of the black consumer, of the quote unquote black dollar. And that's why I wanted to invite the Diversity Diva to come talk to us about the role of diversity in entertainment and then black consumerism and how it affects cinema. So, again, welcome. Yeah. Diversity. Thanks.
Welcome, welcome.
Thanks.
And, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because if you saw the movie 42, that's exactly why the Dodgers brought Jackie Robinson to the major leagues, was because there was, you know,
I did see 42.
A large, you know, population that wasn't being hit. You know, they're like, hey, we can get these people. The only money I color about is the color green.
Exactly.
They're
right.
All spending
That's
the
exactly
same color
right.
dollar that the whites
That's
are spending.
That's exactly right.
And, you know, and he was like, yeah, people might hate us, but you know what? We're going to win some games. We're going to make some money, you know. And, you know,
and
it
make some history.
Everything.
And yeah.
So what are your thoughts on the diversity of Hollywood? I mean, you know, is that where you're kind of wanting to go with this? I mean, what do you think of the diversity? What do you think needs to be done to improve?
Well, I'm a conspiracy.
To ask a really open-ended question
open-ended.
To start off here.
And it's difficult for me to say, because I enjoy films no matter what the race of the cast, mm-hmm. no matter the race of the writer or director. If it's well done, and sometimes even when it's not that well done, I love movies, and I love people, regardless of race.
Absolutely.
But that doesn't stop me from seeing and admitting to the fact that there is an issue of diversity. One thing that bugs me right now is that in cinema, blackness is being defined by multiculturalism. That burns me.
Okay. And what do you mean by that?
I mean, specifically, that black women can't just be black. They have to be mixed race.
You know, so
and there's
funny.
Nothing wrong
it's
with
so
being
funny.
Mixed race.
It's so funny you should say that, because we were talking earlier before we started officially about Two Guns and how I mm-hmm. really like that movie.
Sure.
And it does seem as when you see the love interest, who's a black woman, it does seem that more often than not, she's not a black... she's a black woman. I'm not trying to say she's not a black
right.
woman. But it's usually either a biracial woman or a woman, a black woman who's so light mm-hmm. that with all of the European features, the long hair, mm-hmm. usually a weave, mm-hmm. you know, the light eyes, which you just
well,
don't...
Well, that's also true for white actresses.
That's
it's
true.
Usually a weave, y'all.
That's true. That is so true. It's like... That's why when you see tracks in the hair, it's not the tracks of her tears, it's the tracks of her weave. So, you know, it Exactly. But, I mean, but that's the whole issue of race in everything, in Hollywood, in corporate America, in TV, in books, is it's it has to be palatable and play to that happy medium. And even, and I personally have not seen 12 Years a Slave. My best friend has banned me from seeing it because she says that she doesn't want me going out and creating havoc on society after I have seen it. But what I'll say about what I know of it, it sounds like it's the most unflinching movie about slavery that we've ever had, because my pet peeve about race in Hollywood is a different one than yours, but you may have this pet peeve also, is I just get tired of how, even when it's someone else's story, it's still told through the eyes of a white person, you know, a straight white person. And so many stories get diluted and neutered and just shifted ever so slightly so that, as I just recently wrote in a play of mine, white people can leave the movie feeling bad enough, but feeling good about the fact that they feel bad.
That's very interesting. I mean, and I think that there's something to be said about that, because one of the things that is curious to me, I don't have a lot of pet peeves. I say that they, if I see a pattern, it becomes a curiosity for me. And so when we talk about
The Help and The Butler are actually the two that came to my mind as examples of what I was saying.
Well, I mean, I resisted seeing The Help for just that reason. Well, and not just that reason. I do feel, personally feel, kind of this, come on, why are we still telling stories about The Help or The Slave? Or, you know, I do feel that somewhat. But then on the flip side, I recognize that it's beautifully acted. It's beautifully shot. It's a great story. There, it's a love story. And it's funny. You know, that's how I
read the book. I didn't see the movie. I despise the viewpoint of the book, so I refuse to go spend money on the movie.
Understood.
And I feel like the last person who really wrote, the last white person who wrote a book about that era that wasn't trying to make it about white was To Kill a Mockingbird. It's like everybody's trying to. It's like, can we have another? Can Harper Lee? Can you get out there and teach white people how to write about race?
Nice. Well, my thing about The Help and then 12 Years a Slave is, the accolades that they receive from the awards, from their peers, from the consuming public, tend to go to the black actors, which is deserved. But Bryce Dallas Howard, she was amazing in The Help. Her character was a monster. And so I don't think, and I think it's kind of along the lines of what you're saying, we don't want to celebrate that monster.
That's exactly right.
But her work deserved it. And so I think race has a very interesting, and like you said, a little fuzzy place in Hollywood. And then another thing that I felt is a curiosity, and if you want to call it a pet peeve, and then I'll stop talking, is there was a trend, it seemed, in the late 90s and early O-O's. Is that what we're calling it? O-O's?
I don't know what to call the last
Me either.
Where black male actors are being catapulted to stardom, like Will Smith, and he stopped playing opposite black women. In the 80s and early 90s, if you had a black actor, you could almost guarantee that a black actress had a job. And for me, it's about economics. It's about, is this segment of the society receiving equal pay? And but now it's shifted with shows like Scandal, where the black actress
is back.
The black female is back, but she's playing opposite non-black men. And to make blackness palatable and sexy, and it has to be, like I said, multiracial, a multicultural, and that's of interest.
Which in some ways is realistic. I mean, in some ways that mirrors the change in society we have. But you know, I hadn't really thought about it before just this minute. But it's actually really perfect for our conversation, because if we want to talk about race in Hollywood, let's talk about Eddie Murphy, because Eddie Murphy completely is a nice little, you know, microcosm of race in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. So think about it. When he hit the big screen, his movies where he was essentially the only black in the movies, where he was the buddy black. He was 48 Hours.
Sure. Trading Places.
Think about it. Those movies, oh my God, people could not. And I loved every single one of them.
So did
I. You know, I loved every single one of them. There was nothing. I loved, you know.
Yeah.
Beverly Hills Cop 3 was one of the worst movies I've ever seen in life.
I'm sorry. But I loved Beverly Hills Cop.
He looked like, even he looked on the screen like he was phoning
like he couldn't
in.
Believe like, he was still there.
Is my check waiting for me back in my dressing room? But anyway, I digress. But he was the so then think about it. Then he went to that phase of his career where he did quote unquote black movies. Boomerang, I think there was Vampire in Brooklyn.
Yeah, Vampire in Brooklyn was amazing.
Okay, Boomerang is one of my all time. That's like
me
my
too.
Ultimate.
But you are forgetting The Golden Child.
The Golden Child.
Coming to America.
Okay.
Coming to America.
But
yeah,
you see, but you know what I'm saying? But when he made that transition, when he started going into movies that became less and less white centered, his career kind of started. Because Boomerang, if I talk as a, I mean, I do this all the time. Almost every black person my age, and I'm 49, within 10 years of me in either direction, mm-hmm. has seen Boomerang, and 95% of them love Boomerang.
Yes.
My friends, my white friends, and I have a ton of white friends. It's not like I'm one of those people, my one or two white friends. No, I have a bajillion white friends.
You are the diversity diva.
And I've been a diversity diva since I was 9 years old, because I've always had all kinds of friends. But most of my white friends haven't even seen Boomerang. But if you say 48 Hours, Trading Races, Beverly Hills Cop. So his career kind of went in the crapper until he started making kids movies.
So yeah.
Then, for Disney, yeah.
So then he became relevant again.
Sure.
The Voice and this and that and stupid movies. And think about that. Think about that.
I'm gonna say
I would love to see Eddie Murphy Raw come back. I would love to see him go. I would love to see him go back to what made him.
Yes.
Because I mean, it's like my kids, you know, see Eddie Murphy, you know, and they're like, "Oh, donkey."
But do you see what I mean? Though he's kind of almost he, as a black male, he had his career trajectory in Hollywood is such that he was only perceived to be funny by the vast majority when he was being the black comic relief.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
That's all I'm saying.
Well,
you know?
Well, I mean, they had to do what worked.
Yeah.
And I'm not defending it. I'm agreeing with you. But the only thing I will say is I like Eddie Murphy. I loved when he did Daddy Daycare. But like him, and to take race out of it, someone like Adam Sandler, where they began very lewd and lascivious.
Right.
They were just really grungy in their comedy, but then they became husbands and fathers, and their work changed. They themselves transitioned. I felt the transition was based on.
And I do think that maybe in his transition to making the kid films, I don't think that was the issue when his movies went like Boomerang. Boomerang, I'm sorry. I am a chick flick lover,
junkie.
Okay. And Boomerang holds up with anything. Like, You've Got Mail is one of my all-time favorite movies. I could watch that over and over and over again. And it's not
Me too.
And it's not that great a movie.
Shop Around the Corner.
You know, it's not that great. I know. Don't get me started. I can do this all day. You know, I love that movie. And Boomerang is every... And the soundtrack. Don't even get me started on the soundtrack.
I was on the set of that movie, by the way. But we'll have to talk. Yes.
But you see what I'm saying? So film in America in so many ways has always been about the comfort level, because if we're going to talk true diversity, there's a whole lot of things and bodies and experiences we don't see on the big screen. We at least see some blacks. There, you know, where's the Latino? You know, where's the Asian, the different kinds of Asians, okay? Yeah. Well, how many disabled people do you see in a movie, unless it's the butt of something, okay? Are fat people, okay? Again, unless it's the comedy and it's the butt of something. That's my problem. That's my problem, is that all of the screens, whether we're talking the little one or the big one, or the stage, or the stage, don't truly reflect the America that we all live in.
Right.
That's the problem. People with an accent, people, you know, who are short, you know.
Do you think that it should realistically reflect the America that we live in? Is that what we're talking about when we talk about diversity and entertainment?
I think it should. I think it should? But here's what I mean by that. My point isn't force feeding it in every movie. Every movie doesn't have to have an obligatory black friend or Asian neighbor or Latino coworker. I'm not talking about that. I'm saying let's hire someone to tell a beautiful story that's by a Latino writer who's reflecting their flavor of life.
Sure.
You know, and again, everything doesn't have to be about what America thinks. I mean, when I say that, I'm not saying it has to be about immigration or the persons in the barrio. I'm just saying that there are a lot of stories to tell.
And when we talk about diversity, for me, I'm looking for diversity within the black canon of film myself, because I personally think that film, across the board, no matter what, should be imaginative and creative and have a hint of fairy tale. I mean, those are the kinds of films that I personally gravitate toward. And I have a problem with black films just being about the black experience. We got to keep it real. That, for me,
as if there's a singular,
As if there's a singular experience. But although Boys in the Hood was an incredible film, that is not our only story. Mm-hmm. And it seems like we've either got these weird black romantic comedies or these keeping it real films. And I am looking for not just the black version, not like About Last Night, where it's just remade with a black cast, you know, but where is our black The Neverending Story? Or where is our black The Princess Bride, where it's about just this love?
And why do you think Hollywood is so afraid of casting, like, just black actors for these mainstream big blockbuster
box
movies?
Box office. Yeah, well, I mean,
I'm gonna say my point and then let the diversity diva have at it.
Sure.
I think that we have, and by we I mean collective America, accepted black people as having a say-so in the black experience, but not in the human condition. That universal conversation, we have not yet been accepted as equals in that conversation. That's what I think.
I personally think it's more raw and basic than that. It's about the visuals. And, I mean, I'm going to try to keep this non-political because it's not about the politics of it. And I mean this. I mean this. I know somebody will hear the politics of it, but it's not the politics. People have visuals stuck in their heads. Mm-hmm. That's why for some people, the visual of a dark-skinned first lady is internally repugnant to them, because that's not the, back to the fairy tale. In their mind, that's Jackie O's spot in the White House.
Yes.
You know.
And our first lady, our current first lady, is as elegant as Jackie O.
Right.
I will say it. I think she is.
Exactly. But the point is that, but just visually, even when you're talking about dark skin, dark skin. That's why it's interesting. I cannot pronounce her name. The beautiful young lady who was in 12 Years a Slave.
Lupita?
Yes. Who you cannot look at an award show anymore, a magazine, a Facebook thing about. She is redefining the visual. She's redefining the visual of what people think of when they see beauty. That's why film, more than anything in our society, is so important to have representation. Again, not in a forced hate the word politically, the phrase politically correct, but for purposes of making my point, not in a forced politically correct kind of way, but just so that if I go see a good story and this beautiful dark-skinned woman or this beautiful Latina who has an accent, if I see enough of that, you know, or then that changes my visual of what beauty is, of what normal is, of what intelligent is.
Sure.
Now, Piggy, you know, kind of building off that a little bit, do you think that, like, studio executives, you said, you know, it's the money, you mm-hmm. know, that the movie's going to make. Do you think audiences are generally more open to a diverse cast, no matter what color the skin of the actor is, or is it a fear on the executive's part? Oh, man, if we cast this person, you know,
and
the,
I would
the white
say,
folks aren't going to go see it. Yeah. Or,
and I would say think...
Because we talk about, they're obviously aware of the, you know, the black dollar, you know, I mean, everybody's got the money.
Yeah.
You know, so if they're saying, hey, let's make this movie we're going to make about last night because it'll have a big opening weekend?
I think it's both, but I think it does start with the decision makers. Again, just like corporate America. Just like corporate America. If we say, if I'm in top management and say, even if it's, because it's illegal, of course, and say internally, well, I can't put a black in that supervisory position
sure.
because my white employees won't like it, then even though that black person that I'm thinking of is the most qualified person, indirectly, I've made a statement if I put a lesser qualified white person in because I'm still supporting this, but that's the way it should look.
Sure.
And I think Hollywood is the same way, is that, and I think sometimes Hollywood underestimates America.
I do too. I mean,
does it underestimate America? Because let's think about the whole Spider-Man fiasco
absolutely.
With the young Glover from Community. What's his name?
Donald Glover. Well, yeah, he's always been on a campaign to play Spider-Man. But recently, Michael B. Jordan was just cast to play Johnny Storm,
mm-hmm.
The Human Torch in the new Fantastic Four. And, you know, the comics, the Fantastic Four are all white dudes,
white people.
And so people are freaking out, but my opinion is...
But those are the geeks who would freak out about anybody that doesn't look...
Right.
Yeah,
because
they freaked
people,
out about Ben Affleck.
Even white people who don't look the way they think the character should look.
Right, you know, and absolutely, my opinion, we talked about Donald Glover. Dude, if he's in Spider-Man,
mm-hmm.
and he plays, and the movie's awesome, I'd love it.
Right.
If he's in Spider-Man and the movie sucks, I'm not blaming
his race.
I'm not saying, oh, well, they, of course, because they got a black guy in there to play a white
some
superhero.
Would, but...
No, you're
yeah.
right. See, I'm not,
yeah,
you know.
I mean,
so I'm just wondering, you know, how is that line divided? I mean, you know, between the, you know, the studio's casting, you know, and saying, hey, we're going to cast this guy because he's a great actor, and Michael B. Jordan is a great actor.
But it gets back to people follow the money. Like, for example, Best Man Holiday, which came out.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the work I do, sometimes I have to just go, when I go to the movies, I don't want to see 12 Years a Slave. I want to see something that is complete light and fantasy. So I went mm-hmm. to go. Of course, it was heavier than I thought it would be, but hello, they threw me. Okay, so they surprised me. But that did so well in the box office that all of a sudden, the studios are going, oh my God, well, we need to do the remake to this and to that and yeah. to this and to that to all these other black movies, all these
sure.
other black movies, because they went, this was, I think, number one or number two in box office its first or second week out,
mm-hmm.
and first or second box office in America. But then
they started talking about, I believe, Vanity. A Variety did an article about, even though it had domestic box office success, mm-hmm. how will it play internationally? And then it's like, is it really about race? Or
it's not about race.
Or people don't understand the type of humor. I mean, so then the conversation still has to be had about race. And we're talking about Variety,
right.
you know,
and
releasing
that's,
this
but
article.
But that's people being silly. There's not a white person I know, and maybe I just happen to know a higher caliber of white people than the average person Variety knows, but there's not a white person I know that couldn't have seen Best Man Holiday and would not have gotten 80 to 85% of the humor. There may be the occasional thing where blacks in the audience are like, oh, that's my jam! You
right,
know what I mean?
Yes.
Where there's that spontaneous cultural touchstone reference point. But other than that, I mean, I have.
But how do you think that it would play overseas in Japan for Japanese audiences?
But how does anything play overseas in Japan? I mean, August Osage County. How's that going to play overseas in Japan? You know what I'm saying? I mean, you can take any movie in America that is Midwestern or West Coast or East Coast or Southern, and any Southern movie with white women. I mean, just name one.
Oh, Steel Magnolias.
Which we all love. If you, you know, how did that play in Japan?
Sure.
You know, I mean, Investment Holiday, these are college-educated black people. These
professional, successful.
They were like, well, what was a boy? Blah, 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 blah. There was nothing to decipher. There was nothing to decipher.
I think we should all talk like that today. Yeah. What's a boy? What's going on?
I'm sorry. See, I didn't.
Oh, it reminds me of the airplane. Remember the jive talk scene? Yeah. What did you like, my man?
The way that he reacts, he's like, well, what are you talking about?
And the good old days of movies, I mean, like Richard Pryor, where Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder can be in a movie, and honestly, because they were such talented actors in the writing of those movies, you know, that again, I can't honestly believe that anybody watching that movie was getting all caught up in the race of the people.
Yeah. Well, speaking of race, let's talk about the Oscar race, because that's huge.
It's a big thing because there are a lot of African American actors nominated, and of course making a big deal about, oh, look at all the African American actors that are nominated this year. This is great. Which I wish we kind of were at a point where we could just stop saying.
Right.
Hey, and they're just all people. Let's just not make a big deal about why you shouldn't make a big deal because, you know, Chiwetel Ejiofor is nominated. He's an amazing actor. He should be nominated.
Right.
Because he's a great actor and not because he's a black guy. So,
man, he's all right. I'm just kidding.
All right.
But I have to say this last thing before I have to leave.
Go for it. Go for it, please.
It's like with anything, though, in America, when people say that, it's still, no disrespect to him, white privilege talking.
Sure.
Because it's still a big deal when people of color achieve anything.
I'm not taking away from it.
And so you're absolutely right. One day it will, you know, just like when there's a short actor that gets something, nobody's saying, oh, it's a short actor who was nominated. Oh my God, that's so amazing.
But I bet if, what's his name? I think he's on Game of Thrones. He's the little person. Is that the politically correct term now? Little person?
I think it is,
and he was an elf and Penelope. I bet if that guy was nominated for an Oscar,
that's
they
true.
Would make a big deal.
Because that's a first. You're right.
The first little person. And he needs an Oscar because, one, I don't discriminate. I think that little dude is fine. Okay? And he's a fantastic actor. I think he is.
Yeah, you're right.
So, okay. All right.
Michelle, thank you for joining us. That's for you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us.
That is a token of our appreciation, and we hope to have you back.
All right. Michelle T. Johnson, the Diversity Diva from Kansas Star. That was pretty cool.
Thank you.
A subject I think that can be talked about all day.
I agree.
So we're going to swing into the Oscars now. And what do you think of the Oscars? Are you ready for this year's show? Are you going to be watching on March 2nd?
I will definitely be watching.
Ellen DeGeneres is hosting. Yawn.
I do love her.
I like her, but I don't know.
You like her? I love her.
I wouldn't say
do you watch
I love
her show?
Her. No.
You are missing out.
I've seen her show. I mean, I don't watch her show. Sure. I don't say, hey, it's 3 o'clock. I got to go watch Ellen. See, I know what time it was.
That's very nice.
I've seen it.
In my house, when we were home at that time, anytime we're home at that time, we're watching Ellen. My mom, myself, and my children. It spans for us generations. And so I love Ellen.
I'm sure she'll do fine as host. She's the, you know, she's the safe choice.
Every few
years they get a wild hair up their butt and they try, hey, let's get James Franco out here. And it's just like, what did you think was going to happen when
disastrous.
You're like, they had him. He hosted a few years ago with
Yes.
Did he dual host with Anne Hathaway?
Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah, I mean, and he was totally just disinterested in the whole thing. What did you expect to happen?
I think that that is a testament to our conversation on diversity to have a lesbian be the safe choice. So.
Right, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, cool.
If I can say that.
I think it's fine.
I just did.
So, Ellen says, so what do you like, dislike about the Oscars?
What do I like and dislike about the Oscars?
Too long. I know that'll be the first.
I haven't gotten the opportunity to watch the entire telecast in one sitting. I've gotten to watch clips. But there was one year that, was it the guy who directed Rush Hour? Is that? Did he directed or produce it?
Brett Ratner?
Yeah, it was somebody.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. He produced the show.
Yeah, and I thought it was completely interesting. I thought it was interesting and still glamorous, and I didn't know what to expect.
I like when they shake it up a little bit. I mean, I know they have to honor tradition and all that stuff, but I think it also kind of maybe factors in because, you know, most of the Academy is white.
Yeah, I mean,
so it even ties in with, you know, that whole, it's a white conservative.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and every year that they nominate black actors, and the conversation is raised, why does it have to be for roles where they've played servants, slaves, degenerates?
The help, the butler.
Yeah.
Even going back to
Glory. Which,
Glory,
I ain't going to lie.
The Wind, the woman that played the...
Oh, Hattie McDaniels?
Yeah, she, I believe, was the first...
Yeah, the first black female to be nominated for an Oscar. And then for Halle Berry to win, to be the first black woman to win, period, for her to be the first black woman to win. And then for her to win for Monsters Ball, are you kidding me? That pornograph... Anyway, we're not going to talk about that.
Yeah, see that.
Because that is a serious sore spot for me.
They give... You know, these awards. Denzel won for playing a corrupt cop. I mean, it's not always the case, but you know, I think, you know, Chiwetel is great in 12 Years a Slave.
He is.
You know?
And I liked some of the interesting choices that Steve McQueen made with extending scenes and letting the discomfort settle in. I'm not going to ease up for you.
Yeah.
You know, I liked some of the choices that he made. I don't know if I'm a Michael Fassbender. His name is Michael.
Michael Fassbender.
I don't know if I'm a fan yet.
I think he's all right.
Yeah.
I don't like him. I mean, I'm not like, hey, it's Fassbender's in this movie. You know right. It's going to rock. But I'm also not put off by him when he's in movies. I mean, I think he's generally okay.
I've seen more of his stuff, but the first thing I saw him in was the X-Men Next Generation. Is that what the new school?
First Class.
First Class, yeah. I was angry that he was cast as Magneto because I think Ian McKellen...
Who would you have gotten to play a younger Ian McKellen?
You know, I don't know. It would have to be somebody super sexy because I think Ian McKellen is. I think he is super sexy, and so Michael Fassbender just didn't live up to that for me because he, you know, Ian McKellen is badass as Magneto.
He is a badass.
He is totally.
And he's like Magneto, and what the hell else has he done?
Oh, who
Gandalf?
Ian McKellen? Yeah, he's Gandalf.
He's got all kinds of powers. It's hard to cast. I mean, with a guy like that, it's hard to cast a younger actor to play a younger version because you're always going to have that. Yeah, but he's no Ian McKellen.
Yeah.
So I generally do tend to like the Oscars and watching. We watch every year. Our family gets together and we watch. And I'm usually writing during it and doing some kind of a smart-ass recap of the show. And
excellent.
I live tweet. So if you're on Twitter, follow me at TBE. English, you'll be able to catch me in my snark during the show because I like to jump on Twitter and really let them have it. So yeah, so I'll be watching this year's show. That's on March 2nd. What is it on? NBC this year, ABC, CBS.
You want to talk predictions real quick?
We're going to do some predictions. We're going to do something a little different. We're going to do a little game. Let me get out our. We're going to have 9 categories.
Okay. 9?
Yeah. I don't know if you want to have any kind of wager on this or you just want a friendly bet.
Oh, a wager.
Oh, yeah. I figured we'd make it interesting.
I will wager you.
I like to make things interesting.
I will wager you a chocolate cake. You like chocolate cake?
Chocolate cake. That's good. I like that.
There it is.
Okay. So we're going to, and I'll just kind of mark a T and an L.
Wait. I'm on a diet. Wait a minute. Not chocolate cake.
So you're not, whatever.
We'll make it work.
You'll owe me when this is over. We'll just say that.
Whoa. I'm going to win. Okay.
See, I'm a Leo.
Wow.
You win.
You know, Donnie Wahlberg is a Leo.
Okay. Right on. There's a lot of us. We rock. So, all right. So, we're going to work backwards. We're going to do picture, actors, directors, supporting actors, writers, and animated feature.
And we're going to talk Razzies.
Nine categories, and we'll jump into Razzies next. So, yeah. All right. So, ready? We'll work from our way back. We'll start with best animated feature on that list. Did you see any of these? The Croods, Despicable Me 2, Ernest and Celestine, Frozen, and The Wind Rises.
The Wind Rises, that opens in this market on Friday.
Soon, yeah.
Yeah.
This week I've seen it. I've seen four of these. I haven't seen Ernest and
this is the same guy that did like Ponyo.
Yep.
And
it's a beautiful movie. It's really weird. I tried to watch it with my kids. They're just like, what the hell is this movie?
My girls love it, but they love Japanese.
I mean they love the animation.
Yeah.
They're beautiful movies. I mean, it's one of those where you really, you know, I mean, obviously they're in Japanese, so you don't even have to understand. You can just watch it and just be mesmerized by
excellent.
The art. I am going to go with, for this one, Frozen.
I'm going to go with Frozen.
Yeah.
No chocolate cake for us.
Yep. All right. I just think that's the... Disney, I think, is the easy, you know, one. So I said we're not going to debate
these. I mean, and not just easy, but it's the clear winner. I mean, The Croods was okay for me. Despicable Me. I did not see Ernest and Celestine. I didn't see that one, unfortunately. But Frozen, I think it's going to take the chocolate cake.
All right. Best original screenplay.
Eric Warren Singer and David O. Russell for American Hustle. Woody Allen for Blue Jasmine. Craig Borton and Melissa Wallach. Dallas Buyers Club. Spike Jonze, Her. And Bob Nelson for Nebraska. And I am going to go with, for best original screenplay, Spike Jonze, Her.
Well, that's what I was going to say. If we can't just pick the same ones. I tell you what, I'm going to go with, just to be different, I'll go with American Hustle.
American Hustle?
Not even because I think it's going to win, but just so we have some different answers.
American
Hustle is actually the one that I'm really worried is going to come in and win a lot of awards. And I really like the movie.
It seems to have
like that, the general... But I don't even know if, like, I've talked to a lot of people that just hated it. They're like, Timmy, tell me this is a good movie. And I'm like, well, it's good. It's maybe not great.
Yeah,
but
it's not
good.
A great movie. It had pacing issues and, yeah. But Christian Bale was on fire.
It was missing a great ending.
It was missing.
It needed a sucker punch.
It did.
That whole time, they're like, we need a way out. We need a way out of this. Yeah. We need a way out. I was waiting for them to
have been
pulling like one big con on everybody.
Exactly.
And then it just had a nice, tidy ending. Especially when De Niro came in.
You thought something was going to happen.
This is going to get interesting.
He actually speaks that language. And this dude is Mexican
I thought
it
was going to get crazy.
But it didn't. You know, he just showed De Niro's pretty face for nothing.
All right, so I'm going to go with American Hustle. Kerr's going to win. I'll just be different. All right, best adapted screenplay, Richard Linklater, Julie Delpy, Ethan Hawke, Before Midnight, Billy Ray, Captain Phillips, Steve Coogan and Jeff Pope for Philomena, John Ridley for 12 Years a Slave, Terrence Winter, The Wolf of Wall Street.
For me, I went with Steve Coogan and Jeff Pope, Philomena.
That's a great movie.
It's an amazing movie, and I'm like you.
Judi Dench is amazing in that movie. I love her.
Dame.
She'd be so cool
Judi
to hang
Dench
out with.
She's my favorite actress. She is Chocolat, but she kicks ass in Chocolat.
I haven't seen Chocolat.
What?
It's chocolate.
It's not. When you got Johnny Depp with a cute ponytail like Josh's, it's chocolate.
All right. I'm going with John Ridley for 12 Years a Slave.
And I think that 12 Years a Slave is very important. One thing that I wanted to mention before is this idea of slave narratives being adapted for the screen is huge because a lot of people don't even know.
This is based on a book of the guy who went through these.
Well, it's adapted on a book, but a slave narrative is a very specific type of writing that, you know, academics tend to, you know, study, but the lay person is kind of like, what's a slave narrative? You know? So the fact that this slave narrative, this 12 Years a Slave narrative, was adapted, I think is incredible.
All right. Read off our best supporting actress nominees.
Best supporting actress. Sally Hawkins, Blue Jasmine. Jennifer Lawrence, American Hustle. Lupita, man, you wanted me to say this one because I had to pronounce her Nyong'o. Last name. Lupita Nyong'o.
Nyong'o.
12 Years a Slave. Julia Roberts, August, Osage County. And June Squibb, Nebraska.
Well, I'm going to go with June Squibb.
I'm going to go with June Squibb.
June Squibb. Have you seen Nebraska? She's hilarious in that movie. I think Jennifer Lawrence is probably going to win.
Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah. Again,
I'm
she's
not
the darling.
Feeling American Hustle. I'm just not. So, and she's pretty, and she was fun in that movie. I'm going to go with Julia Roberts.
Really?
August, Osage County.
All right.
That's what I'm going to go with.
All right. Julia Roberts. There was some great acting in the movie. You know, I generally don't really get into Julia Roberts movies that much, but I thought she was really good in this movie. I mean,
now, I liked Lupita.
There was a lot of great acting. Yeah, and she could win, too.
She could win. She
I think that's kind of what's cool
so.
About this year's Oscars is that it's really hard to find that one.
Yeah, particularly this category.
Yeah.
That's a... to watch.
Best supporting actor, Barkhad Abdi for Captain Phillips, Bradley Cooper for American Hustle, Michael Fassbender, 12 Years a Slave, Jonah Hill, The Wolf of Wall Street, and Jared Leto for Dallas Buyers Club.
I was going to go with either Bradley Cooper for American Hustle. Now, I'm not feeling the film, but I thought he was pretty incredible with the rollers and the hair.
Nice perm.
He did an outstanding job in that role. Or Jonah Hill for The Wolf of Wall Street. I loved that movie, and I loved everybody in it. I loved Martin Scorsese and his direction. So Jonah Hill would be my top pick, and Bradley Cooper would be my second best
okay,
guess.
What's your first pick?
Jonah Hill.
All right, I'm going with Jared Leto, Dallas Buyers Club.
Yeah, okay.
All right, best actor.
He's cute.
I'll let you read this one because I know this has got your new boy on it.
Best actor, Christian Bale, American Hustle, Bruce Dern, Nebraska, Leonardo DiCaprio, The Wolf of Wall Street, Chiwetel Ejiofor, 12 Years a Slave, and Matthew McConaughey, Dallas Buyers Club, who is also in The Wolf of Wall Street.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hey, my son goes into that every now and then.
Yeah.
You know, I let my 14-year-old see American Hustle. Am I a horrible father?
The Wolf of Wall Street?
Yeah. What'd I say?
American Hustle.
American Hustle and Wolf of Wall Street.
You let your 14-year-old see The Wolf of Wall Street.
Yep.
Are you a terrible father? You know, I don't like to pass judgment on other parents because we all make mistakes. No. Hey,
I was watching R-rated movies. When I was
that's what I'm saying.
At least
we
he had
watching.
Me there with him.
Let me tell you something. Speaking of Eddie Murphy, and you wish Eddie Murphy Raw would come back. We went to church to Sunday school, and we came home. We walked home to my grandmother's house, and she packs us up in the car. She said, "We're going to a movie." That movie was Eddie Murphy Raw.
Sweet.
After church. So, there
what'd,
it is.
What'd you want for best actor?
I'm going to have to go with Leo DiCaprio. I love Christian Bale, but I preferred him in the other picture. What was the other one?
Out of the Furnace.
Out of the Furnace. I preferred him in that to American Hustle, although he was amazing in American Hustle. But I'm going with Leo DiCaprio, not necessarily because I think he's going to win. I hope he wins because this is the first time in his career that he has captivated me personally. And because of it, and my power of captivation is so huge and has such an impact on the world, I want him to win.
Leo.
You're going with Leo DiCaprio, too?
Yeah.
Nice.
Moving on. Best Actress. Amy Adams, American Hustle. Cate Blanchett, Blue Jasmine. Sandra Bullock, Gravity. Judi Dench, Philomena. Meryl Streep, Orange County. I would say probably Cate Blanchett, but I haven't seen Blue Jasmine, so I won't say that because that's kind of the general consensus. Yeah. But since I haven't seen it, I'm going to say Sandra Bullock.
I thought Sandra Bullock did very well in Gravity. I also haven't seen Blue Jasmine, and I will admit it's based on my Woody Allen prejudice because I love Cate Blanchett. She had me at hello when I saw her at and Elizabeth, I was on board.
Yes.
But I'm going to go with Judi Dench, Philomena.
That's who I went with when we did our...
Yeah.
Our Casey Live Awards.
That's right.
Judi Dench.
I'm not a fan of Amy Adams. I liked her in...
She kind of gets nominated every year now. It's like, Amy Adams make a movie, write her name in.
Yeah. And I liked her when she was doing, like, fairy tale type movies.
Yeah.
But I think it pissed me off when they cast her as Lois Lane. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I didn't like her as Lois either.
Yeah.
Best Director.
Best Director, David O. Russell, American Hustle. Alfonso Cuarón, yep. Gravity. Alexander Payne, Nebraska. Steve McQueen, 12 Years a Slave. Martin Scorsese, The Wolf of Wall Street. I went with Martin Scorsese, The Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with that, too. It's kind of in my head just then. Just thought, yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say Alfonso Cuarón, but I think they're going to give it to Scorsese.
I mean, Gravity was amazing.
Again, it's just like I feared David O. Russell, American Hustle, coming in and just dominating.
Yeah, when you and I didn't discuss special effects today, which is a category, right? I would give that hands down to Gravity.
Gravity.
Yeah. Hands down.
Hands down. All right. So let's go Best Picture, wrap up this segment. American Hustle, Captain Phillips, Dallas Buyers Club, Gravity, Her, Nebraska, Philomena, 12 Years a Slave, and The Wolf of Wall Street.
For me, I would be happy if it went to, I don't know, any of these maybe.
They're all really good.
They're all really good. For me, equally as good. Except The Wolf of Wall Street does stand out for me. And I am not huge on debauchery, but I love that movie.
Yeah. Sometimes debauchery is fun, though.
It was so fun.
And just
hedonism.
Relishing in it. And just laughing at it and being like, what a total dick. You know. So I'm going to go with Gravity. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gravity.
Gravity is a good one.
I'm going with Gravity. You like Gravity, Josh?
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah. Loved it. Who's the scientist?
I can't remember.
Jeez. Degrassi. Degrassi Tyson. Yeah. He can pick that movie apart all he wants. It was a fun movie. The dude's like the smartest guy on the planet, so of course he's going to find plot holes in movies. So
right. let's talk a little bit about
the Razzies.
That's right.
You know,
and what are the Razzies, Tim?
The Golden Raspberry Awards. They're given to the worst in Hollywood entertainment.
For this year, right?
For the year, right.
All right.
We're not going to go through all the nominees. Let's just go through some of our thoughts on what do you think. You know, my first thing is, how awful is it to be Lindsay Lohan right now? This poor girl is nominated. Let me get my list back up here for a couple of places. And she's nominated for playing herself, which is the sad part about it.
Oh.
Scary Movie 5. And The Canyons, she's just in it. But I think these two inappropriate comedy, Scary Movie 5, she's getting nominated for acting for playing herself. And I'm not on a pile on Lindsay Lohan. I think the girl is a product of, like we've talked about, horrible parents raising child actors, and I think she just went off the deep end, and she has never had the right support.
And here's the thing. Sometimes these parents, and I'm going to say this real quick, sometimes these parents have the wrong motivation for putting their kids in.
Most times they
do. You got to watch the movie... not Borat, but the other one that Sacha Baron Cohen did, with the gay fashionista.
Bruno.
Yes. And there was a segment in there, and I felt like he was breaking character, where he's interviewing parents. He's casting babies, infants, can't even crawl babies, or just crawling babies. And he's asking these parents, can your infant lose 10 pounds in a week? And they're like, yeah, of course, my baby is a professional. And he was like, what the fuck?
People are the worst.
I think that she is I would lose my mind if my parent handled me like a product.
But then, you have Adam Sandler's getting nominated, Will Smith, Johnny Depp. I mean, this is worst actor, Johnny Depp. I mean, okay. I guess Will Smith's on here for like best on-screen duo or something.
Yeah.
I mean, Sylvester Stallone. I mean, nobody goes to Sylvester Stallone for the acting.
For the acting, no way.
Nobody goes to an Ashton Kutcher movie ever anyway.
No. What was it? What Happens in Vegas? One of my favorite movies. Come on now.
Lady Gaga's on here. And, of course, Katherine Heigl's on here.
You know what? You're doing too much, Tim. You're doing too much.
I know. Kim Kardashian, I mean, that's just like Kim Kardashian's in something. Let's nominate her. I mean,
right. They probably didn't even see that movie.
Then you have directors, Gore Verbinski and M. Night Shyamalan have made great movies in the past.
Yes.
The 13 people who directed movie 43, that movie was awful. Worst screen combo. Everyone that's in Grown Ups. That movie was horrible.
Grown Ups 2. Grown Ups 2.
I didn't really like Grown Ups that much, but it was all right. It was good.
I've seen it probably 100 times, maybe more. But Grown Ups 2 was amazingly awful. Even I, who is a lover of Adam Sandler, I love him.
I used to love him. I hope I haven't grown out of, because that was kind of one of those things growing up where I was, when I was younger, I was like, I can appreciate the dumb comedy that is out of Sandler, but nowadays I'm just like, dude, come on.
Love him. I'm still on board. What was that? Just Go With It. Loved it.
Yeah, that was all right. Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah, with Jennifer Aniston. It was, he's not terrible.
Then he just gets together and makes movies with his buddies. And
that's pretty cool.
Is it?
I think it's cool.
I guess we get free movies, so it doesn't matter. But then you have like worst remake, ripoff, or sequel, Grown Ups 2's on it, Hangover 3, Lone Ranger, Scary Movie 5, Smurfs 2. Did you see Lone Ranger?
I didn't.
See, I'm of the opinion that that movie's not as bad
as they're making it out to be.
But it's not great. No, it's not. It's way too long. You almost could get an hour out of this movie. There's just so much happens that has nothing to do with.
Right.
But it's all epic and spectacle.
And I think it's kind of along the lines of John Carter. Because John Carter was not terrible. Taylor Kitsch. Ain't no way a movie with that man and his shirt is off the majority of the movie is it going to be terrible. But I don't think that it lived up to the hype that it received before it came out. And I think Lone Ranger...
Also, I think casting Johnny Depp as Tonto, even though he has Native American in his blood somewhere.
Somewhere?
But whatever. I mean, I think there's plenty of... we talk about diversity. There's a ton of amazing...
Yeah, they were all just in Twilight. Come on.
I mean, you can't find somebody to play Tonto.
Yeah.
I would rather have seen Johnny Depp play the Lone Ranger.
Exactly.
What's wrong with that? Because he doesn't. He likes to wear makeup and funny hats.
Yeah.
He's a weirdo. Anyways.
I didn't say that.
So that's the Golden Razzies. That's March 1st. So that comes out right before the Oscars.
Nice. Now, speaking of Halle Berry, I did appreciate the year she won her Oscar. She also won a Razzie, and she went and accepted that one as well.
Sandra Bullock did that, too.
Yeah, it's awesome. I think when you've got in your career...
Every actor knows they make crap.
Yeah.
I mean, and most of them, while they're making crap, know it's crap.
Yeah. I mean, and it's part of their studio contract.
It is.
These movies are part of a package. They don't just say, Well, you've seen Entourage.
Nobody decides to make the Tooth Fairy, The Rock.
I liked the tooth.
I'm sure he did. But do you think that was a movie he said and was like, get me in this movie? It was one of those, hey, you know, and he has kids, I know. And he's one of those guys, he makes movies so his kids can watch. But it is one of those, they were like, hey, let's... So,
yeah, I agree. I like The Rock and I liked him in The Tooth Fairy, but you're right. He probably wasn't like, oh man, I read this script today.
That's right. We got to do it. So,
all right. So, well,
let's set up some things going around town and then we'll get out of here. What do you say?
Send it home.
Let everybody go. Going on this week, Critics versus Oscars is Wednesday night. That's at Screenland Crown Center. Mm-hmm. Alamo Draft House is having an ultimate 90s party. Thursday at 8 o'clock, Rocky Horror Picture Show on Friday at 10:30 here at the Alamo Draft House. Saturday, you'll love this one, Maximum Overdrive.
Oh my gosh! Oh my gosh! Are you serious? Maximum Overdrive. I kid you not. Sometimes I'm in my kitchen and I'm like, I need to hurry up because like, it's about to come alive. It's going to cut my wrist off. I was scarred by that movie while being in love with it at the same time. I'm just saying.
And the movie Interruption this Saturday, they're doing Anaconda.
Wow. Is that with Jennifer Lopez?
Yeah. Jennifer Lopez, John Voight.
Yeah, that's going to be hilarious.
So, all right, that's going to do it for us here on Tim and Lo Show, our fourth episode titled The Quest for the Golden Man.
The Quest for the Golden Man. And make sure you are checking us out on Facebook so that you can stay abreast of any prizes, any giveaways.
Yes.
We will feature those.
We will be having some very soon. So keep back. Tim and Lo Show at The Tim and Lo Show on Twitter. The Tim and Lo Show at gmail.com. Hit us up with your comments. Ask us questions because I'd like to, you know, start reading questions.
Me too.
I'd like to get some feedback during the show.
And let's get some interaction going.
This is what John in Overland Park thinks of us. Then we can tell John in Overland Park what we think of him. Now we want John in Overland Park. So if you're listening. Also, apparently we have listeners in Guam.
Nice.
According to some tracking, I'm not sure how scientific this is or if we got scammers listening to us in Guam. But if you listen to us in Guam, I would like to hear from you.
That's right. And thank you for listening.
All right. That's it for the Tim and Lo Show. Thank you very much. Peace.
Peace.
All right, dude. Okay. I was thinking the whole time that we needed it, so I didn't.
I was like,
I didn't think at one point he was just like,
Josh has just become the producer. Wrap this shit up. Okay, Josh. I said like 8 cuss words. Bleep them out this week.
Can we, here, I want to do something that I don't usually do. Can we be silent for a minute? I want to let the room noise happen
for a minute. Go for it.
Just so I can filter it out easier. All right, that should be good.
All right.